helping children make decisions. Some kids are natural decision makers. In fact, they make too many decisions. They want to call all the shots. But then there are some children who are really the opposite. They're just afraid to make any decision. And of course, most people are in between. Parents can do a certain amount to help their children become good decision makers. Now, we don't have total control over this process, but there are certainly ways in which we can help kids. The reason we don't have total control is because children have their inborn personalities and their inborn genetic natures. A child who is anxious by nature, for example, is often anxious also about making decisions. That child, that kind of child, may have fears of failure. Maybe he's afraid to get it wrong, and so he holds back from making a decision at all. And some kids are afraid of being embarrassed or humiliated, even though they won't likely be embarrassed or humiliated by any decision they make. They may have an undue fear of that. Many are afraid of the unknown and just have a larger need for certainty than the average person might have. So when a person needs to know for sure that something will turn out just right, they're going to be paralyzed a lot of the times from making a decision because, of course, we don't have that guarantee with hardly any decisions that we have to make in our lives. A child who has an anxiety disorder, that's not anxious nature, but an anxiety disorder, may have trouble making decisions because of that disorder. And the difference between just being anxious and having an anxiety disorder has a lot to do with whether the anxiety really holds a person back from living a normal or full life, or whether the anxiety causes a lot of distress to the person. And there are various anxiety disorders that can impact on decision making. For example, GAD, GAD, which is a disorder of worrying, can sometimes spill over into affecting the ability to decide things because the worrying person, the one who worries about every single outcome, may just have too vivid imagination to see what wrong could happen, what disaster could befall from all the different possibilities in making a decision. Well, what if I do this? Then this might happen, and then that might happen, and then this would be just terrible. And such a person with a general anxiety disorder just might be a catastrophizer, they call them, somebody who just sees the worst possibility for every option. And there's obsessive-compulsive disorder, and certain types of obsessive-compulsive disorder can impact on decision-making. For example, there's something called rumination, which is the tendency to think and think and think and think. Now, some of us are ruminators without having OCD, but some of us have OCD and are ruminators, which means that the mind is kind of paralyzed in a circuit which the thinking process itself is almost a ritual designed to ward off deeper anxieties. So if a person has severe difficulty making decisions, usually there's something going on in the emotional realm or the brain realm, we can call it, because actually OCD is more like a brain glitch where the brain is getting stuck instead of being able to move forward. Just having that one symptom of long, lengthy ruminations is not the problem. It's when those ruminations interfere with the child's ability to move forward and just function normally. Then we want to have a mental health, assessment and just see if there's something that, you know, that the child really needs attention with. Other disorders, mental health disorders like depression, for example, also interfere with decision making. So if you have a teenager who's really stuck and just can't decide, you know, what course to take, what summer program to do, what career to choose when they're a little bit older, things like that, but really stuck, okay, that really stuck symptom can be a symptom of a larger mental health disorder. Though, again, it doesn't stand by itself in that case. Like somebody who is tired and hopeless and weepy and also is having severe difficulty making decisions, and there's many other symptoms that go into a total diagnosis of depression, but not being able to make a decision may be part of that symptom picture. So if the child was able to make decisions before and there's a change now in the way the child is functioning, that may again call for an assessment of some type to see what's going on. There's ADD and attention deficit disorder. That sometimes interferes with decision making because of the person's impulsivity or their lack of patience almost to sit and think through the options and come up with a plan, or just difficulty concentrating for a long enough period of time. So in that disorder, sometimes, not always, but sometimes decision making is affected. And even stress, a child who's under stress or a teenager who's under stress, just like an adult who's under stress, has more trouble slowing down, relaxing, and making well-thought-out decisions. It's just the stress seems to interfere with the decision-making process. So we've got, a lot of things ranging from just general character to, like, somebody who's just has trouble making decisions, you know, as a single symptom, all the way to decision-making difficulties being part of a larger symptom picture of other mental health issues that might be going on for the child. So if your child is stuck severely, even with a single symptom, it's always good to check it out with a mental health professional and see if there's something that can be done. Because sometimes there are mild alternative interventions that can be useful to just get a person's brain unstuck. For example, Bach flower therapy, that's B-A-C-H, named after Dr. Bach, medical doctor, who developed the use of this harmless form of vibrational medicine, really, that can help people specifically with making decisions. There's remedies to help children who are, and adults, who are stuck because they always look at too many pros and cons and can't settle down, or they're stuck because they just don't trust themselves enough to make a decision, or because they're afraid of failure. Whatever the reason is, there's a good Bach flower remedy. And, you know, in certainly mild cases of decision-making problems, that may be all that's needed to sort of unstick the brain, get it unstuck. And even if there are more severe reasons why the person's having decision-making problems, the Bach flowers can often be very, very helpful, surprisingly helpful. It's something to look into. There's also when there are severe mental health issues that are impacting and are behind the decision-making difficulties, psychotropic medications. Of course, when it comes to children and adolescents, we always have to be careful with those and make sure that they're being given out, I would say, not by just your general practitioner, but by a professional psychiatrist who deals with those medications all the time and who is willing to monitor your child very closely for the first couple of months, because psychotropic medications can help when there is severe distress in the functioning of a child, but they can also increase that distress in young people. So that it only affects a small amount of kids and adolescents that way, and in the negative way, but you know, you don't know where your kid falls, so you need to make sure that you have a psychiatrist who's willing to do very close monitoring in the first couple of months to adjust medications, if that's necessary. Sometimes psychotherapy for adolescents and people, you know, young people in their 20s who are having decision-making problems, that can help too. A lot of kids, you know, they just don't know what university to go to, what course, or whether they should go to university at all or do something different with their lives, who they should marry, you know, how they should take the next step into adulthood. And sometimes just getting them their own counselor, not because they have a mental health issue, but because they have a decision-making issue, right? Sometimes that's all that's needed. And they can work it through with their own psychotherapist. And often that provides them with tremendous relief and support and just the help they need to get over that hump. Now, in terms of the difficulties of making decisions, there is, we said, fear of failure, fear of humiliation, fear of the unknown, and the need for certainty. So a lot of kids end up coping with those fears by either making endless lists of pros and cons and then being stuck there, or asking others to make the decision for them, you know, to pick out their clothes, to pick out their food, to tell them, you know, what camp to go to tell them who to play with this weekend, etc. They just leave that decision up to somebody else. It's as if the child just has no trust in his or her own sort of basic instincts. They want somebody else who would know better, so to speak, to make that decision. And some kids, they're just so afraid of making the wrong decision because they're afraid that other people will laugh at them or that they would be mocked somehow, and they want the approval of others. So even when it comes to clothes, for example, they won't trust themselves to go to a store and pick out something. They want to go with a friend who knows better, or, you know, somebody who can do the thinking for them. Of course, adults are like that too, taking our personal shopper sometimes so that we won't make a mistake in fashion. So there's we want others to like us too much, and that can be another reason, part of the lack of self-trust issue. Again, there are Bach flower remedies that can help build up that self-trust, and psychotherapy can help build up that self-trust. If a child is really lacking confidence, it's almost like they don't have the confidence to say that my decision is as good as your decision. You know, why do I have to let you pick out my clothes? If I like it, it's good enough for me. Well, what can parents do to help their child come to that conclusion that my decision is just as good, probably better for me than your decision would be for me? I'll figure out what I want to eat and what I want to wear and what I want to do with my time and how I want to live my life. Now, ultimately, it's ideal for each individual to be able to say that, you know, to have that opinion about himself, that he or she is the best one to judge when it comes to him or herself. There are certain steps that parents can take that will help kids feel that way. Again, because of these other issues that we've talked about, we can't, you know, we won't always get the same results, but there are steps that we can take that will be helpful. For example, when kids make decisions that are foolish in our eyes, they made a mistake, they bought something that cost way too much money, they didn't use good judgment, you know, they were inexperienced, they were kids, and this happens a lot to adolescents. You know, they're just learning about life, and they go out and they make what looks to us adults like really stupid decisions, you know, like really. Now, the main thing is that a parent has to react in a way that teaches the child that it's safe to make wrong decisions. Because, you know, part of this paralysis that kids can get into about decision making is that somehow it'll be disastrous, catastrophic to make the wrong choice. Now, if we feel that way, we won't be able to make decisions very easily, because decision making is equivalent to risk taking. Making a decision means we're saying yes to something and no to something else, both of which were possibilities. Of course, or, you know, there may be many things that we're saying no to when we make a yes. And that yes has got to be some sort of risk. And sometimes we're going to get it right, and sometimes we're going to mess it up. Now, many decisions that we make that are erroneous, you know, that they just weren't good choices, many of them are reversible. Some aren't. Okay, so we want children to know that many are reversible. You bought that item, it cost too much. You know what? We can take it back to the store and start shopping again. So no big deal, right? And if the parent reacts that way, you know, to a younger child, an older child, whatever, who is ever, you know, having this problem, the child learns that, oh yeah, no big deal, I can do it, I can fix it. What if the child purchased the item on a no sales, like what do you call it, no returns, right? It was a sale, final sale, and the receipt says absolutely no returns, and the item was really a big problem. Well, the fact is that some decisions are irreversible, and there's a loss that we suffer. Of course, the loss is part of life. Yep, and there goes, you know, $200 down the drain, or for, you know, a little kid who has spent his allowance on the wrong thing, well, there goes, you know, $5 down the drain. And that's disappointing. The parent can name the child's feelings without judgment. Okay, we don't want to go like, how could you be so ridiculous? I can't believe you wasted your money on that. Okay, none of that stuff, because, again, that's what causes a child to lose faith in herself, to feel that, oh, you would have done it differently, and she's just too incapable of making a good decision. We don't want the kid to get that idea. So, again, if the parent says, oh, well, you know, there's that money down the drain, or, oh, well, now we have to live with this for a while, that's too bad. You know, it's not the end of the world too bad. It's just too bad. And if the parent can share some of his or her own stories about how they made similar errors, that will be all the more helpful. Yeah, I blew that money on those shoes that I bought, and I thought they were just the greatest thing, and I couldn't take them back, and they actually pinch my toes, and I've been wearing them while I wore them once and twice, and you know what? It was a couple of $100 down the drain, and I was a little upset about that, but oh well, you know. Now, it's true that there are some decisions we make that are not like, oh, well, like the some decisions we make are so big and have such serious consequences that it's really, really unfortunate if we made the wrong one. Nonetheless, life, you know, includes those kinds of decisions also. You know, some people pick the wrong partner to marry, and then that's one of those big decisions that it's really not easy to remedy and has life-changing consequences. It's really big. It's not just, oh, well, you know. But even then, we want to show a child that all decisions that we make are part of a learning process. You know, the life itself is a big learning process. And if we can learn something from any experience that we're going through, then that's all good. So somebody could say, well, it's not what I wanted. You know, I made a really bad choice. A person could say, start a program at university, thinking that they want to be such and such, and waste 2 or 3 years before they realize that such and such just doesn't suit them at all. So then they're going to go like, wow, 3 years out of my life and all that money, all that time and all that effort. Now, we want a child to be able to say, even so, it's better if I change it now than continue for the next 70 years doing this thing that I hate just because I started on the wrong path. So a lot of kids get the idea that decisions cannot be changed once they're made. It's like, well, you made your bed, now you lie in it. Okay, like we have to be very careful what we say to our kids so that, you know, they don't feel like there's no way out. For even bad decisions, there's mostly something that we can do about either coping with the consequences of that decision, surviving it, you know, doing the best we can with it, learning from it. But more often than that, we can usually change certain features of it, and sometimes we can change the whole thing. So it may be challenging or difficult, it may be a big job, but there is a way out or a way through everything that we're dealing with. And we want to give children that impression and also give them the information that we have walked that path ourselves, that this is the path of life, that we have to take risks. In fact, when a child makes a choice, you know, it's a little bit different or unique and nobody else is choosing it, we don't want to highlight the sheep mentality. What do you mean you're choosing that? Nobody is choosing that. Rather, we want to highlight the courage of the child to be an individual and to say things like, well, good for you, you know, that you're finding what works for you and you're, you know, not going along with the crowd. That's great. I love a creative person. And so sometimes we have kids who are wearing clothes, like even little children, picking out outfits when they're very little. You know, the outfit might look kind of funny to us, but if he likes to wear those colors with those patterns and those stripes and whatever it is, and if he likes that, then we should encourage his individuality, encourage his creativity and his ability to make that choice for himself and say, well, you know, good choosing. You managed to put that together just great. Do you like it? Right? The child says, yeah, I like it. Okay. Then that's, you know, especially for little kids, that's okay. If you are concerned about your child fitting in, you don't want your child to have problems where he goes to school, you know, wearing his shorts in the middle of winter or something and everybody laughs at him, you can still commend the fact that he chose the shorts. You can ask him if he wants to wear it even though it's winter and cold and the other children won't be wearing it. And if he says he doesn't care, then you can say, okay, and will you be okay if they tease you? You know, like you just ask the child if he's going to mind that. If he says, I don't care, then it's certainly not a problem for you, okay? So then if the child comes home crying because they did pick on him for the outfit that he chose, then you can just comment, as we said before, about the decision. Well, you took a chance, and that's a good thing. You know, now you found out that if you do something really different, the kids are going to tease you. And so you can take that into consideration next time when you make a decision, whether you want to worry about that or not. You don't have to. It doesn't matter if they tease you. But if you don't like them teasing you, then you might, you know, take that into consideration. Of course, you'll use the language that is appropriate for the age of the child to convey those concepts. But, you know, no, it's not, again, the end of the world. And certainly we're not going to say to a child, well, I told you so. I warned you. Because you specifically don't want to set yourself up as the expert decision maker. Because that causes the child to feel like, oh, you know, but I don't. Which is the opposite of what our goal is. We want the child to feel, I know what's right for me, or I'm willing to take the risk of finding out if something is right for me. So as parents, when we see that a child has made a decision, even a decision that is, you know, not a great one, we don't want to blame the child or mock the child or emphasize the stupidity of the decision or anything like that. We want to applaud the child for making the choice or the best choice that he could make in that moment and help him perhaps sometimes to analyze, you know, what he might take into consideration next time if the decision isn't such a great one. We don't want to punish wrong decisions, and we want to just help the child sometimes work out what we can do to recover from a decision. We also want to introduce the concept that Hashem is part of the decision-making process. For example, you know, Hashem opens our eyes and closes our eyes, so to speak, in order for us to encounter an experience. He kind of works our brain with us so that even though we do have free will, sometimes Hashem wants us to look at the situation and choose a path because he wants us to have that experience. And by recognizing the role of Hashem in this, a child can be helped not to blame herself for making a serious wrong decision. So, for example, let's say a young adult, picks a marital partner who does turn out to be a total disaster, and a divorce has to happen to rectify that situation, heaven forbid, but sometimes this is what has to happen. Now, we would want to say to that child, you know, Hashem helped you choose that person. You know, it was supposed to be part of your life growth process. That's why it happened. You know, you had lots of guys, and objectively speaking, you know, it would have made more sense to choose somebody else. But, you know, Hashem closed your eyes to that possibility and let you go down this road. So when we... It's not a cop-out. It's just the fact that Hashem gives us ideas. You know, he plants ideas in our minds, and that is true. We have to respond to those ideas. We have free will. But, you know, sometimes we are kind of led or encouraged to go in a certain direction, which is why we can ask Hashem to guide our thinking and to teach children, well, you know what, ask Hashem to help you and then make your decision. And whatever decision you make, that's the one that will lead you on the correct life experience. It's not that that's the decision that will be the best decision. It might actually be the worst decision. But if you've asked Hashem to help you make the right decision for you, the right decision may be the one that's wrong, if you're following me. The right decision may be one that's going to teach you an important life lesson by the fact of its characteristics, by its nature. So, you know, that can also relax a person, knowing that they're not completely alone and they don't have the full responsibility of making, you know, decisions. So those are, we're talking about especially big decisions. But, you know, let's say a child wants to be able to be, well, you want your child to be able to be a person who can put a picture on the wall and say, yeah, I like that picture and I want it in that location. You know, a lot of us these days can't actually do that. You know, we have to call in the interior decorator and ask, does this picture go here? And is this a good picture for this room? You know, we've lost the confidence that we can choose something that we like in a certain location. Let's say you want your child to have that personal confidence when he's very little. Whatever he does and wherever he puts it, you just ask him, do you like it there? And if the child says yes, then you say, okay, then that's your choice. And, you know, good for you for making a decision. You can actually reinforce decision making by using specific praise, like good for you for making a decision, or, you know, listening to what the decision that the child made and then saying, you're such a good decision maker. So you could say, oh, good choice. You're such a good decision maker. For example, you could say to little kids, you know, should we have spaghetti tonight or lasagna, right? And, you know, little child says lasagna. You say, ah, good decision. You're a good decision maker. And that can help the child develop the confidence and the sense of self as, yep, yeah, I'm a good decision maker. I can do that. So giving a child that label can be helpful as well. So in short, what we want to do as parents is reinforce decisions, give the child opportunity to make lots of decisions and let them know that they're doing well at that, no matter what the decision is, and be very careful to refrain from being judgmental in a negative way about decisions a child has made, choices that they've made, so that we don't punish or scare or frighten or embarrass, humiliate, or put down a child for making wrong decisions. And by doing that, we're helping all kids, whether they're anxious by nature or you know, just regular, whatever, to step forward and build on their decision-making abilities all throughout their lives.